Welcome to the Franchise Hounds podcast. I'm Greg Macchia, a certified franchise consultant. Thanks for joining me as I interview franchise industry pros to dissect, explore, and discover franchise ownership. Joining me today is Dan Claps and Zach Nolte. Dan is the CEO and Zach is the COO of Voda Cleaning and Restoration. It's an exciting opportunity for two franchise industry veterans to be launching Voda as business partners. Voda Cleaning and Restoration is elevating the standards of cleaning and restoration across the nation. Voda is a concept that practically offers two franchises in one. Carpet and floor cleaning services produce consistent and predictable revenue immediately, which drives brand awareness and leads for the higher revenue insurance-paid restoration jobs. I hope you enjoy today's discussion with Dan and Zach from Voda Cleaning and Restoration. Dan and Zach, welcome to Franchise Sounds. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure to be here.
I appreciate you having us.
Thanks for having us. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you on the show today. So, you know, myself and my listeners can learn more about Voda Cleaning and Restoration. You know, it's interesting. I was thinking, you know, Voda is a new franchisor, but definitely not, you know, lacking in experience as you kind of married experts in franchising with experts in cleaning and restoration, right? So tell us a little bit about that process.
Yeah, great. Well, thanks again for having us, Greg. I'll start and then pass it over to Zach. Or actually, what we say is punt it over to Zach because our company, everything we do centers around football analogy at Franchise Playbook. We launched our platform, Franchise Playbook, in early September. And Franchise Playbook is the company that owns Voda. And our vision is to have multiple brands under our umbrella over a period of time. We own and operate the brand. We create the brand too, actually. But when we first had the vision for Franchise Playbook and what would become our first brand, Voda, the thought process was if we could marry the culture that I had built in my previous company and Zach had built in his previous company, we were very both focused on our cultures in our respective businesses. We could marry culture and marry that with the best minds in franchising, the best in the world at one thing. The best marketer, the best ops person, the best accountant, whatever it is, the best in the world in franchising in a specific space, the brightest mind. We can marry culture with those people. And then similar to how private equity ties great people to the results of the business, the EBITDA of the business, the value of the business. If we could put all three of those ingredients together to make a recipe, we felt like we could build a great company. And so what we did, Zach and I were very intentional having so many relationships in franchising. We've been very intentional about putting the brightest minds into our business, into Voda. And so far, it's been probably our most important decision. I mean, I think I talked to Zach most about culture, the people, the core values, and our recruiting process, which takes us a very long time, anyone who's interviewed with us.
It is definitely it's a process, and it has to be because we are a new brand. And that is one thing that a lot of people come to us to say is that this is a brand new brand. Like, why should I trust that you guys know what you're doing? Well, when we start talking about our backgrounds with my 10 years of franchise experience, Dan's 10 years franchise experience, our CMO has worked with massive companies like Anytime Fitness and Scenthound, has consulted with a lot of home service brands. And so we took those core three people and we were like, all right, we have enough experience now to be able to know what we're doing and know how to make franchises successful. And then when it came to the restoration space, and as we started to learn restoration and all the nuances of it and how complex the kind of the business model can get from the support standpoint, we then went after a VP of operations that has another, you know, 10 years of restoration and franchise experience. And so when someone comes to us, they should feel very comfortable that we have the exact game plan from day one. All the way through year 10, we know what that looks like, and we have the support in place to be able to handle that.
Yeah, that's great. You know, it's funny. I talk a lot with candidates about emerging brands and the pros and cons, but really with you guys, there's not many cons. And in that, typically with an emerging brand, I say, hey, there's a lot of territory available. You're going to get, you know, access to the founding team. But typically it starts with a founder who had a very successful
flagship corporate location, and then decided to franchise. And at that point, they're in a new business. They're in a new business, which is franchising, that they typically don't know much about, right? But with you guys, you had this very established corporate flagship location that was doing very well, that's experts in their trade, that you guys identified, and then, you know, married this expertise in franchising, which is really the best of both worlds, which is really, really cool. I'm curious how you guys, when you guys decided you wanted to become franchisors, what was the process like of finding the right, I guess, first industry and then maybe brand? Can you walk us through that process?
Yeah. I'll start with that one because it kind of the genesis of where we started. I had been in franchising for just about a decade. Lead generation and franchise recruiting has really been, franchise development has really been my skill set and major core competency. And after exiting my previous business, I knew I wanted to be a franchisor. I learned a ton over the 10 years. I'd been in franchise systems, but pretty quickly realized I had no idea what I was doing. I had never been a franchisor. And so partnering with someone that had that skill set like Zach, who can tell you his background, made absolute sense. And so it started for us at like the partnership level, the co-founder level. Zach and I have complete opposite skills. We share similar skills, but what I'm good at and love doing, Zach doesn't like. And what I'm not good at or don't like, Zach loves doing. And so we work really well together in that way. I used to joke around, I wish I could clone myself. Well, it feels that way. We've cloned each other, except in the skill set that we both don't have or don't like doing, which is a really great partnership, right?
Dan, I just got to hop in there. We only need one Dan Claps, man. You're an original. We don't want you clone. We want you just how you are, man.
Yeah, you're right. The world could only handle one. But, we realized that, we knew we wanted to be in home services. And I'll never forget, like, texting back and forth late at night around, what about siding? What about plumbing? What about roofing? What about, dog grooming? We went on and on and on. But eventually we started to focus ourselves onto like what we call a playbook. And the playbook for our first brand centered around very specific needs, a need, not a want business, non-discretionary, recession proof, it's COVID proof. People have to use the service. We wanted a business with simple labor that anyone could do with a good attitude. A larger labor pool. We wanted a business with a high average ticket and high average unit volume. Greg, I always tell people when you're looking at an industry, there can be a painting company that's doing, $2 million. But if in the item 19, if the average painting business does $500,000 per store, right, you want to look at that industry. You want to look at the margins of that industry because there's always so many things you can do to change how you paint a house, right, or a business. And so when we looked at restoration, we saw that the average unit volume was strong. We saw that across the industry, we saw that the margins were strong, that the industry was growing, not shrinking. And so those reasons and many others are kind of what led us to restoration being the industry we wanted to go into.
So you guys, I first identified restoration and then said, we're going to find a brand in this we want to partner with.
We identified that playbook and then restoration kind of checked all those boxes. And then, yes.
So we went through a series of, through our networks and through people that we knew, we got introduced to a lot of restoration companies. And then we started kind of honing in into a certain type of restoration company. And we liked the idea of partnering the floor cleaning side of things with restoration. So it kind of narrowed our scope in even further. We did everything from procuring, lists, making cold calls, emailing. We almost got to a point where we were about ready to just mail out a mass list of people, but we quickly were able to. And it kind of, by happenstance, fell into this amazing company based out of Lauren, the D.C. area. And he had kind of this amazing culture built. He was a 13-year-old business, a true kind of story of coming to the United States, starting with absolutely nothing, not even really knowing the language, and then kind of building himself into floor cleaning, carpet cleaning. Building into more and more floor cleaning and upholstery, kind of the healthy home living using green products before that was even a term. And then it kind of added on the restoration side of the business. And so where we started getting to know him and his wife, both amazing people, amazing founders that we wanted to kind of bring into the culture of the business. And that's when we started realizing that we had something really special. and something that we can really build off of going forward. And so it was probably about two months of going back and forth, Dan making trips down to DC as well, what a 4 or 5 hour drive, some long drives and some dinners at their house. We got to know them very personally. And then we signed the dotted line in early February. And that's when we then rebranded and kind of start building out the cleaning and restoration playbook.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, one for the original, you know, the founder of the cleaning piece, really living the American dream right now. He created this business. Now he's part of this cool new franchise concept. So was there a total rebrand? I really like your guys' branding and what you've done. It could be a cleaning and restoration company, or it could be like the newest energy drink, right? It's really cool branding and logos. So you guys did a full rebrand?
Yeah, the original brand was, I mean, it was great for a local community. It actually, the name actually paid homage to the two founders at the time. And so it was definitely an emotional part for them. That was their name for 12 years. And so it was very difficult for them to kind of separate for it. But we put it on the table and said, hey, we're going to hire an agency. And with the leadership of our CMO, that if we provide something that's better and you like it, you know, would you be willing to switch? And he said, yeah, for sure. And in the back of his head, he was like, there's no way. There's no way I'm switching. And so we went to work and we put a lot of time, a lot of effort. We put a lot of pressure on from a timing standpoint with this agency. And they created this absolutely beautiful brand that pays homage to the founder's roots, Serbian. And Voda stands for water. And it actually, the D and the A out of Voda also kind of pay homage to the DNA of the original name. And there's also kind of like the molecular V also kind of pays homage to the original logo as well. So there's all these ties into the original brand with then taking the kind of the new cutting edge, kind of cool athletic type of look that we're kind of shooting for. So at that point, it was a very emotional call. I think, you know, there were some tears shed, all that type of stuff, but we knew we had found a brand that can stand the test of time.
And just to piggyback on that, you know, the Zach nailed it with the emotional side of it, because, you know, this was almost a deal killer for us. We almost, you know, we wanted to move forward, but we felt like the original name wasn't going to work on the national level. And I remember saying to the founder, we have an amazing relationship, his name is Dragon, he's an amazing person, we're great friendship. I remember saying, look, like, we're not trying to change your name because of our ego. We understand what you built here. It's an amazing business. We're looking to change your name because you're successful. You're successful because of your systems and your culture and so many things. But the name actually is pulling that success from where it really could get to. And so what we did was we ended up saying, look, we'll do the deal. We'll do the acquisition. We'll keep the name. But if a third party branding the company, which is what we used in the agency we worked with, and they don't like the name, we're going to change it. We have to change it. And this was something that a week before closing, we weren't doing. And I remember driving one day and saying, you have to push. Telling myself, like, no, you have to do this. I felt it in my gut that the name change meant something. And so we used the national agency. And so he was selling them on, you know, the name. And it was a good name. But we were just blown away that they were able to take our vision, which was really Yeti. If you think about Yeti coolers, Greg, Yeti coolers took a $20 cooler average ticket. You know, average cooler price is $20. And they turned it to a $300 average ticket because of the branding. And so if you actually look at the Voda logo, there's some hint of like the Yeti kind of branding element that we wanted to put in, that kind of masculine but trendy look. And so anyway, put a lot of effort into the branding, and so we appreciate, you know, the compliment about it.
Yeah, I need a Voda t-shirt. I'll rep it out here in Colorado.
We'll get it to you.
All right. So I was curious. So it's interesting. So, you know, there's a lot of companies, and there's some big behemoths in the traditional restoration space. But, and you guys have touched on it, there's not really anyone doing cleaning and restoration. And what was the original flagship doing that? And, you know, what was the idea behind that? Because I like it. I feel like it's a good match.
Yeah, there's a number of reasons for it. The original founding location is and was currently doing that as well. He's actually started with a floor cleaning and then moved into restoration, and that's the exact same process that we're following with our franchises. And so the idea behind it is that in traditionally restoration, it does take a solid 6 to 8 months to really start building a reputation, and it's still probably one of the only last standing home services that is very personal, very networking based. It's got a network with the insurance companies and adjusters and property managers, all that fun stuff. So it does take some time. And so when we saw that, and we were also able to say, how do we get cash flow going quicker for our franchise partners, and how do we get them ramped up so they don't have to worry about, you know, their first 6 months cash burn? It was only natural for us to then say cleaning, like floor cleaning. We have built out our trucks from day one to be able to handle floor cleaning and restoration. All the equipment there is there to handle both as well. And so we're able to really make a huge dent via our marketing and getting those floor cleaning jobs. And then we're also then instilling ourselves as the expert in the industry from a consumer perspective, as being the floor cleaning expert. And also, hey, if you ever need it or something happens to your home, we're here to serve you as well. With our restoration services. And so there's a lot of different nuances, how those things tie in. I mean, even the number one referral for restoration is usually the carpet cleaning as well too. So you're attaching that. But if you look at floor cleaning as being like the, what I call the bill payer, the one that's, you know, paying the bills, making sure that your cash flow positive, and also that you're keeping your crews busy. And in the restoration, it can be kind of the end all. That's where we want to be. That's where we want to be focused on. But it's that sometimes there's some seasonality to it. You can't really predict out, you know, the next month of worth of jobs. It is very reactive. And so if you have that stability from cleaning and the profit of restoration, it's the perfect marriage.
Yeah. What's the revenues percentage split now versus cleaning and restoration, and what would you like it to be?
Yeah, you know, it was fascinating because like when we discovered that there was not a franchisor doing cleaning and restoration. You had carpet cleaning businesses and floor cleaning businesses. You had restoration companies. There was no true restoration and cleaning business. It was to me like discovering fire within franchising, right? Like how could there not be franchise like this? Because if you think about it, you can go to Google and say, what's one of the best lead sources for restoration? And the answer is floor cleaning and vice versa, right? And so not only does it produce, not only does the floor cleaning produce predictable revenue and a little bit more cash flow, but it also lends itself to getting more restoration jobs. And so, you know, one of the exercises that we do when we were talking to founders is we would say, you know, with this specific question, if you had to pick up right now, move to another state and start over, how would you start getting customers in your business, right? And with restoration, it was always around this idea of, you know, you can do digital ads and you can do that well, but you're going to need to build relationships with property managers, plumbers, and insurance agents and referral partners. As you know, that takes some time. And so we really didn't like that component of restoration. I don't know how you do restoration without having the cleaning and it be lucrative for the first 6 months to a year because you have this backlog of pay. But when you have the cleaning, the answer from Dragon was I would go to another state. And I would do the same thing. I would start with cleaning, immediately start paying my bills as I build my restoration work, right? So that's kind of always been our focus. The current business, you know, in the item 19, that could answer the percentages better than I can. But, you know, it's about, you know, just about $1 million in floor cleaning and 800 in restoration. And we came in saying, wow, let's grow that restoration side of the business. The carpet cleaning is a great foundation, floor cleaning. Let's build that restoration side. And so, Zach, you probably want to touch on where we want it to be, but that's where it is now. We do about 1.75 in gross sales overall.
Yeah, the carpet cleaning side of things, because he's spent so many years in carpet cleaning, it's only natural that that's where he's at. And so he's at about 55% of his total sales is in the carpet cleaning side of things. We actually want to flip that. We want to be very heavily kind of leaned towards the restoration side of things. And kind of less focus on the floor cleaning, and that'll happen probably like a year and a half into the business. When we were actually going through this the entire industry search, we looked at a lot of actual floor cleaning companies too, and the one downside that we saw to them is that each van was very hard, kind of capped at like a 300,000 volume per van, or sales per van. And the only way to scale was to add more vans. So in order to do 2 million in sales, you'd had to have a lot of vans to do carpet cleaning. And so if we reverse that and said, all right, if we could just have that one van that's there to collect enough profit to pay the bills, like I said earlier, and then the restoration van side of things is not as like dialed in, you could have, you know, massive jobs that one van can take take on, or you have the smaller jobs that the restoration van could also take on as well. And it's not as an exact science as the cleaning side of things.
Yeah, you know, because I was thinking about that. You think about, you know, a lot of these true, you know, the big restoration companies, they pitch, we get insurance work, right? We get insurance referral work. But if I think about this scenario, you know, I walk in my door and there's water, you know, shooting out of a wall somewhere it shouldn't be. My first call is not the insurance company. It's how am I going to get this water turned off, right? So it's probably a plumber, right?
You're just all right, Greg. You know, there's actually a whole study on, you know, the average person does not trust their insurance company anymore, left and left, right? Insurance wants to not pay. And so the average person in America doesn't necessarily call their insurance. You said it, you call their plumber. I mean, if you have a pipe that's leaking gallons of water, that gallons come out per minute, you're calling the plumber that's going to fix the problem that's creating the water. And then you're going to fix the water that's on the floor, right? You're going to stop the problem. And so people call their plumber and their plumber refers restoration company. Remember, we have relationships with these plumbers. We have, there's a benefit to them to refer on Voda versus not to. And so the plumber, which is a circle of influence, is a big part. And then the property managers, you know, years ago, there weren't as many property management. Wasn't as predominant. Right now, neighborhoods are built by developers who install property managers. Buildings have property managers. And so the core, like hub and spoke model of what we do is that we build deep relationships, property managers and plumbers within a community. We've got all kinds of ways to help facilitate that for the franchise partner. But on their end, they're going to show up as a franchise partner, right? Think about this. We're fortunate that awarding territory is something that we don't really have any challenge with, right? And so we're being able to be very picky with who we bring in. We're bringing in the best people we possibly can that can sell, that can build relationships, that are professional. You know, I think about our franchise partners right now. You know, one of them is a Capital Med Device rep. He's an incredible sales professional. When he walks in with a branded Voda Polo and meets with a property manager versus the other guy that was an hour late in his truck that wasn't wrapped, without a polo, not clean shaven. You know what I mean? Like the difference there in how we build those relationships makes a huge difference. And then obviously the service we provide. But yeah, most of our work is coming from property managers, plumbers, and all the paid media that we do. We do all the lead generation for our franchisees, and we answer the phone for them too. And so insurance is actually, I would not want to do insurance work. They take a long time to pay. They tell you what software you got to use. You like work for them. I want to get into a business to work for myself, not for insurance.
Yeah, I wanted to get into that because I just this done for you marketing kind of concept, because I know Dan, that's what your background is. And honestly, when I'm working with a candidate, that comes up quite a bit. You know, folks say, okay, so I open my doors, how am I going to get customers, right? And the fact that you guys, this is your expertise, I think I've heard you describe it as that, you know, you're a lead generation company that your product happens to be, you know, cleaning and restoration. So that should, you know, comfort anyone who's worried about customer acquisition. So what do you guys offer around that?
Great question. I mean, it's at the core focus of actually like half our team. If you take Dan's background in lead generation, who's an expert at finding kind of leads and also beat out the network and also teach that to people to how to become better networks, how to find those leads. And then you pair that with our CMO who came from the fitness background, which is probably one of the most highly competitive markets from a digital standpoint. And so you compare those two, you combine those two different backgrounds, and we really have something pretty cool and special. We have some of the best suppliers and vendors that are there to support our franchise partners, but also we have the tactics and the ongoing support to be able to say, here's what our lead generation looks like in the first 6 months. And that's going to be drastically different from 6 months to 12 months. And then as we then start to change the shift of the model from more carpet cleaning to more restoration, we're again leading that strategy behind that side of things. So there is a heavy digital side of things. There's also a lot of coaching on the networking. And we also have procured a lot of lists too that help them get in front of the property managers, plumbers, and everybody else that we need to get in front of. So a lot of different angles, a lot of different facets to our marketing strategy. And I'm sure Dan has some additional thoughts on that too.
Greg, it's interesting. Like I realized in looking back in my previous company, which was a lead generation company, you know, I don't think because I lived in that world where my entire livelihood for 7 years has been based on generating leads. I had to generate leads to make a living, right? That was what we did. We sold leads. And so my brain just thinks about lead generation in every way. Actually, the guys on the team call me LGD, Lead Gen Danny. I didn't make the name, but you know, I don't care if it's finding a business to buy, to acquire, if it's finding teammates, if it's just the core principles of finding people interested in your service is what we teach. And really what we teach is this idea around an automated mechanism. You need to have an automated and predictable customer acquisition strategy that doesn't involve you every single area of it, right? And so we play a numbers game in our business too, right? In our brand dev process, we've got hundreds of candidates, and that's okay. We tell them, look, this is a discovery process. Sometimes not a fit for you, sometimes not a fit for us, but it's a system. And so we do that in our franchise system as well, where, you know, we've got the lead generation online advertising strategy. We've got the property manager and plumber strategy. But then the reality is, Greg, that the leads are only as good as the mousetrap that you build. The process, the sales process has to be tight. And so what we've done is we went out and we've created this call, you know, we've designed this call center process where this national call center answers the phone within 7 seconds, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And so when you have water damage in your house or in your business, you're not thinking about, oh, I'll just wait for them to call me back. You're gonna call the first person. If they don't answer, you're gonna call the next. And whoever answers and has a nice attitude, most likely you're gonna go. So speed to lead is very important. And so we've designed a system where if people call into our call center, we answer right away. They have a specific process to book the job. They use their own CRM. They schedule the job. So while that other, you know, kind of chuck in a truck, if you will, or whatever you want to call it, the independent mom and pop business owner that does restoration in their hometown, while they're sleeping, we're answering the phone. And so we're winning the job before they even got the call. And so, you know, and that answers the question, because people always ask me, there's so many restoration companies. Well, you got to realize, how many pizza places are in your town? A lot, right? Yeah, you know, there's a pizza place everywhere you go. It's a $25 billion industry. Of course, there's a lot of pizza places. That's a quarter of the restoration industry. Restoration is a, you know, 200 plus, $300 billion actually industry. And so, of course, there's lots of restoration companies, but we compete. We're not with the ServPros and the other, you know, we do with them as well, but we compete with the mom and pop business that isn't answering the phone quickly. And that's really between the lead gen and the answering of the phone where we're winning a lot of business.
That's cool. You know, what's going to be fascinating to see, and I'm sure you guys have thought about this, is that you've had this, you know, very successful flagship location, you know, doing 1.7 million, but now you bolt on these lead gen, you know, answer the phone within X number of seconds to that business. A year from now, it'll be fascinating to see, you know, what their conversion rate is, what their numbers are, just because of this, you know, your guys' ability to button up some of these, you know, customer acquisition strategies.
I wish we could ethically and legally tell you those numbers right now, 2023, because, you know, because of the FTC regulations around the numbers.
Sure.
But yeah, it's we're having fun with building that out.
No, I'm sure. So let's get back to. So you guys started franchising. You were when were you officially kind of able to go live and start franchising?
Yeah, our FDD was completed and we filed and we were able to start selling. April 4th was our official launch day.
How many locations so far?
Just in the last 14 days here, we have our first few going. We have 7 territories and 3 owners all through the last 2 weeks here.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah.
We awarded 7 units in July. We're about 10 this month. And, You know, we were intentional, Greg. Like we, people used to tell us we're crazy because we had a CMO, our whole team, CMO, VP of operations, trainers, and success coach. We had just this very large team that we built in up front because we knew that when we started onboarding franchisees, we wanted to be ready. And so, you know, it's pretty incredible, like the seamlessness that we have because the team's been here for a bit. We're ready to onboard a lot of franchise partners at once. You know, we're growing, I would say in franchising, it's just like technology. You don't want a franchise that's growing slow. You don't want a franchise that's growing too fast. It's like, you know, Goldilocks. You want them to grow just the right pace.
Yeah. That's awesome. And I mean, I guess it shows that you guys, you know, you probably at one point had more corporate employees than franchisees, right? But you guys really believe in what you're doing, and you're putting your money behind it, and you're, you know, so that's pretty cool, and should be really reassuring to anyone, you know, looking to join the system. Where I guess we touched on it, but really no regional component to this, no seasonality. This concept should work everywhere. But you know, where are your locations down?
Yeah. No seasonality to it. You know, restoration. The only thing with restoration is if there is not a water event. Now, remember, water events are not just hurricanes. It's pipes breaking, toilets overflowing, bathtubs being left on while you go on vacation, sump pump breaking. There's so many non-weather-related water incidents. There's actually 14,000 water incidences per day in America. But if there's no weather event, you've got the cleaning side of the business. As far as where we are in Texas, Pennsylvania. We're in 6 states right now, and we're expanding nationwide, but really the regions we're super hyper-focused on, you know, all of Texas, Florida, Georgia, all up and down the East Coast. We're actually getting a lot of traction in Salt Lake and in Colorado, where you are. We're kind of building these pockets, but we'll look at any market as long as it fits our normal demographics.
That's cool. And I guess, how do you guys define a territory?
Our starting point is 85,000 owner-occupied housing units. And so we don't really focus too much on the population side of things. And so we wanted to know how many houses can we work in, which doesn't really even take into consideration to the property management and the commercial side of it. But that's all just kind of cream on top of the territory. So that's how we're building them out. We then take that territory and we also do our diligence on it to make sure that there is the right amount of target demographic within those. And so we have a kind of a little bit of formula, a little bit of a kind of a strategic behind it. So some territories might be a little lower or higher depending on where that is.
Yeah. And the other thing I'm thinking about is, you know, with the carpet cleaning, there is probably a reoccurring component. I mean, I have, you know, dogs and kids. And I definitely need to get carpets cleaned on a regular basis. So I'm sure that's something you guys are thinking about as well. You know, how do we increase the reoccurring component of this, right, with the carpet cleaning?
Yeah, one of the things that we did, sorry, Zach, I mean to cut you off. One of the things that we did when we stepped into the business was, you know, we love the fact that technicians are able to receive about a percentage of additional revenue to bring in. Right. So if you're already in the home, you already paid for the gas and the time and you got your technician there, the technician can say, hey, you know, your carpets are looking great. Why don't I check your air ducts? And they can upsell and they can make a percentage of that revenue with incentivizing the technician. So you've got this air duct side of the business. You've got this recurring element of selling people on you know, a recurring or coming back. So yes, you're exactly right. That's something we're definitely continuing to think about.
Just kind of just one more piece on that too is that through COVID and through people becoming more hypersensitive about being in their homes and also to what's in their houses, there is this whole like desanitization side of things where people are more worried about what is in their air ducts, what's their air quality like, and then we can also get into different types of mold. Like people aren't looking at their windowsills and say, oh, it's just black mold. They're like, that's black mold. We gotta get that out. And so there's all this other additional kind of upsell. That we can really kind of focus on in it kind of all as part of what our motto is, a new level of clean. And so it's not just a floor cleaning. And to original point too, is like down in Texas and Florida and Arizona, like that's all tile and grout. Like, you know, we also can clean that. Our trucks are able to do that type of stuff. But it's the same level of kind of sophistication and also product offering that goes into those things as well. So we're not just kind of a, you know, the carpet cleaning. It's all things floor and in that home kind of focused stuff.
So let's talk a little bit about an ideal owner, and I'm, you know, kind of doing air quotes over here. What are you guys looking for? Who would be successful in this?
For us, there's a lot of people that kind of come into the system and they're like, hey, I want to get in. I want to get my hands dirty. I want to understand the restoration space. And so usually my first question is like, you know, that's okay, but you're only thinking about doing that for the short term, correct? Like you're going to pull yourself out of that as quickly as possible. And so a lot of people come to us with that idea that in order for me to manage better, I need to get my hands dirty a little bit, which is fine. But we are truly going after the what we call the manage the manager type of model. In franchising, it's a version of the semi absentee model where they're understanding it there, but they're also knowing that they're hiring their first technicians or their project managers right away. And so we're looking for people that have management experience or sales experience, someone that, you know, we can get into the net worth and the financial side of things too, if you want, but, we're looking for people that have that business acumen that can come in and scale business. Because of my background and Dan's background and, just the general culture that we are building, we're building a kind of a culture of entrepreneurs, people that want to work hard, and you put in your 1 to 2, 3 years and really kind of focus in, buckle in, and build an empire. And then at that point, then you're able to kind of take a step back and take on that more semi-absentee type of model. So we're looking for business builders is the ultimate expression that's being used right now.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I talk to a lot of candidates and I say, you know, when I do a search for them and I'm trying to find an opportunity that makes, you know, that's the right fit, you know, one of kind of the first filters I run things through is, you know, the owner's involvement in the business, right? Are a lot of guys want to keep their W-2, or they say they want to keep their W-2 initially. And I kind of laugh. They're like, I want to keep it for the first 6 to 12 months. I'm like, well, the first 6 to 12 months of your new business is when they really need you, right? So could someone theoretically keep their W-2? I know it typically costs more, right? Because they got to hire someone to do the work then, or they got to hire someone to do that role.
I'll touch on this for a second. So when we talk to candidates, we look for people that don't want to have their cake and eat it too. And what I mean by that is, yes, can you do that? Yes, but you can't have it all, right? So I just had a candidate recently that wanted to make, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in profit in one territory, keep their job, not work, like everything was a no, right? You can't have, it's a trade-off, right? Like I was just having this conversation with someone that, you know, I don't do anything right now, Greg, it's funny, like it's beautiful out. I don't get outside. I'm laser focused right now, making sacrifices. Later on, I won't make those sacrifices. Something else will trade off. Everything in life has seasons and trade-offs. And I think that we look for the people that understand you can either exchange time for money. You can exchange money for a business. So if you're going to come into our business well capitalized, you're going to keep your job. Maybe you're going to get an SBA loan. You're going to get a general manager and you're going to fund this thing. And you're okay with perhaps even the first year not making a ton of money. Maybe you lose money and you're writing off against your tax return, which is a great strategy. It's great, right? You're building an asset, right? One of the things I tell people is think about when you rent a home. If you rent a home, nobody wants to live in a demolished kitchen if they're renting a home, right? The kitchen was all disheveled. But if you own a home and you're doing a big kitchen remodel, and for the few months you're living in kind of uncomfortableness, you're okay with that, right? Because you're building an asset and you know you could sell it one day. And so if you want to come into our business, keep your job and it's flexible, which by the way, if we notice we can't get you on the phone during the day, we can't schedule a call, how are you going to run a business? Even if you're managing a GM, just the management of people takes some time. And so I think there's a bit, frankly, of an epidemic in franchising where there's this idea that you just sit back and, you know, collect a check and sit on the beach. I've owned businesses for 13 years now. I've never seen that. And I've been in some pretty decent businesses. But what we say to people is, if you're going to come into the business and you're going to have a manager and you're going to keep your job, that's completely fine. But the level of a business running semi-absentee or manage the manager is not really on us. It's on the franchise operator. What I mean by that is, remember, we do all of the lead generation, or a good majority of lead generation. We have a call center, answer the phones, we book the job. We have programs to help with hiring. We have programs to help with, we do your bookkeeping. We do your KPI tracking. We give you a lot of tools in the tool box. You still got to use the tools. And so, you know, what we tell people is if you want to come in and keep your job, let's find a general manager that can actually be involved in the business, have, you know, equity that vests over time in the business. And instead of having 100% of a grape, let's get you to 80% of a watermelon, or even 75% of five watermelons, meaning you're going to give up some equity in your business, but you're going to have someone that's involved as an owner. And so, yes, people can keep their job and run our business, but there's very specific parameters to do that. And then the last thing I'll say on that is, with all that said, we do want someone who their primary focus is VODA, meaning eventually they want VODA to be their bread and butter. So yeah, they can keep their job, but if they want to make money and keep their job, and like, there's got to be somewhere where they're willing to have a trade-off.
Sure. Yeah, no, that makes total sense. And I agree with you. I think it, you know, it comes down to prioritization and, you know, what you really want, but there are definitely trade-offs. So if someone is going to be, you know, focused 100% on VODA from day one, what do they start with? One van and how many employees?
So our onboarding cycle is about 60 to 90 days. Through that 60 to 90 days, we're running pretty fast. A lot of that is actually through the certification classes that we do require as a franchise. They're not, most of them are not requirements by the state or federal. So there are some classes. They do take a decent amount of time. There's a little bit of upfront cost that's listed in our item 7 as well. And so they're taking these classes or hiring those people. But we actually want to start them off with just one van. The reason being is that no matter how fast or how quickly you want to scale, we can get you vans pretty quickly. We have a van procurement program that actually will wrap, outfit, deck out the entire van with our truck mount system, reels and hoses, and then deliver them to the location. And that takes anywhere between 6 to 8 weeks to do so. So if I'm good at forecasting and what our support is like, we're seeing, all right, you're hitting that, you're reaching the capacity of one van, we then can then place another order for that van. So you don't have to have the upfront cost of ordering three vans up front, having the lease payments all on those things. We're able to kind of build and scale as we grow, as long as we're able to kind of foresee where we're headed. And so, same thing, like I with my employees, I want to focus on bringing in, you know, one core field technician and then maybe bring in kind of like an apprentice type of person that we're able to then continue to enhance and build out their skill sets, so that when we do order that second van, that next person is willing to take on that lead technician type of role, take out the truck and have the autonomy to go out and do jobs. And so there's a little bit of strategy that's involved there, but I with kind of my consciousness around the P&L, I do get it, and how we want to scale and how we want to add materials. And so we built the program to be able to be flexible enough to do so.
Great. And can you start this home based, I guess, as long as you have somewhere to park the van?
Yes. Great, great point. As long as you have somewhere to park the van, like, we do want them to be secured. You know, theft is something that we have to kind of worry about. You have a lot of equipment in the backs of these vans. And also, if you are in the kind of the northern parts of the states where it does freeze, we got to be careful of freezing temperatures within the vans, because there's a lot of water in the lines of our truck mounts. And so there is some things we have to kind of just check off the list in order to do so. But you are able to start this out of a home or a small kind of a commercial space or flex use space. It doesn't need to be much by any means.
Great. You guys have been super generous with your time, and I know we got to wrap up soon, but I just had two more questions that everyone wants to know. I guess what's a typical investment to become an owner?
Our investment is 146 to 198 to all in. You can finance that with, you know, SBA approved, and people do 401k rollovers or ELOCs, but the total investment 146 to 198 all in. And then our item 19 is, you know, 1.745 with the 23% net margin after the managers have been paid and royalties have been paid and everything else. After all expenses, that's what our item 19 shows.
You read my mind, Dan. You knew my next question would be, okay, how much can you make?
You know what's funny, Greg? I've been doing this for 10 years, and I've actually boiled this down to, and sorry if you hear some alerts in the background, my computer just buzzes. But one of the things that I've learned is, every person, when they're looking at a business, thinks of businesses in this exact way and in this exact order. And we've actually structured our process around this. So people think about, first, of course, they want how much does it cost? How much can I make? Because it's an investment. But then they think about, how am I going to get customers? How are you going to support me? Number two, how am I going to get employees to support those customers? And how are you going to support me? Three, what does the day in the life look like? And does that match what I want? Four, there's already restoration companies or whatever business in my marketplace. How does this business stand out? Or what's the unique selling proposition in the mind of the customer? What's unique about your business? That's really it. That's like the same. Everyone always thinks about the same kind of question. So we try to address all of them throughout our conversations about Voda.
Yeah, no, that's great. I would say that that list is exactly what I, you know, I candidates' concerns, what I work with them. They have those exact questions. So that's great. You guys have kind of designed your discovery process around that. Well, Dan and Zach, this has really been great. I'd be happy to get any listeners in touch with you, obviously. But if they'd like to learn more, is your website the best place to get started?
Yeah, www.myvodafranchise.com, or obviously, you know, Greg, you're a very talented consultant. And so anyone listening, if you're working with Greg, you're in great hands.
Thanks, guys. And I really appreciate you joining us today. I'm really excited to watch this journey of yours. And hopefully I can help you find some entrepreneurs to help contribute to that growth. I think it's going to be a wild ride for you over the next couple of years.
Wild is what we love.
Awesome. Thanks again, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Franchise Hounds. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover in a future episode, or would like to work with me directly to explore franchise ownership opportunities, please reach out through the form on our website at franchisehounds.com.